this week. I'm Alan Jackson, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Secretary of State Kissinger returned from his latest trip to the Middle East this week, mildly optimistic. On the other side of the world, there was more pessimism over the situation in Southeast Asia. In Cambodia, particularly, with the vital Mekong River supply line now effectively cut, the plight of residents of Phnom Penh became gloomier indeed. Bruce Dunning reports.
Within the past few days, the people of Phnom Penh have begun to realize more fully how serious is the threat to their city. Although the Mekong River has been closed for 3 weeks, most Phnom Penh residents simply presume that the river would once again be reopened, as it has been numerous times in the past when the communist-led insurgents closed it. Now they realize it may be months before it is reopened to supply convoys, if at all. The sight of American stretch jets circling over the city to land at Pochentong Airport underlines Phnom Penh's isolation from the world. For the past week, these planes have been bringing in loads of ammunition in a crash million-dollar effort to build up the country's rapidly dwindling supply of war materials. Food prices are soaring, rice prices are rising especially high, and rice merchants are hoarding because they hope they can push the prices even higher. Already, this practice has touched off riots in the northwestern city of Battambang, and it could happen in Phnom Penh. With the Mekong closed, the insurgents are now turning their attention to the airport. The insurgents are just within rocket range of the field, and every day they fire a dozen or so Chinese-made rockets into the airport and the village around it. The village has emptied out as people flee the encroaching war only a few minutes' drive from downtown Phnom Penh. If the insurgents can make the airport unsafe for the American airlift, Phnom Penh will be totally cut off. Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Phnom Penh.
The news from South Vietnam this week was not as gloomy, but there was increasing apprehension for many residents of Saigon, concern that the enemy terrorist attacks are moving ever closer to Saigon itself, as witnessed the strike against a Saigon suburb Wednesday night. Two conservative U.S. senators, issuing a report on their recent visit to Southeast Asia, called for continued U.S. military aid for the Saigon government. One of the two, South Carolina's Strom Thurmond, suggested that in time, South Vietnam might be able to buy the arms it needs with so far unproven oil production.
I'm confident that if we could appropriate $1 billion a year there for 3 years, the South Vietnamese would have oil coming in by then. We talked to people who are exploring for oil over there, and that the South Vietnamese ought to be able to be self-sustaining after that time. That was the ambassador's opinion over there, I believe Ambassador Martin, and from what we learned, they can be self-sustaining from the oil that will be coming in.
President Ford has asked Congress for additional arms aid for South Vietnam and Cambodia this year. Congress is not enthusiastic about the idea. Wednesday, Secretary Kissinger arrived back at Andrews Air Force Base to report on his latest trip to the Middle East. He was mildly optimistic.
I believe we've made some progress towards establishing a framework for negotiations in the Middle East, and I plan to return there in a few weeks to see what can be accomplished concretely. With respect to the Soviet Union, we have always considered our relationships central to the maintenance of peace, and we will continue to stay in close touch with the Soviet leadership as we negotiate another step in the Middle East and also in the preparation for a final settlement.
At the end of the week, Senator Edward Kennedy introduced legislation to cut off further military aid to oil nations of the Persian Gulf for 6 months, pending a reassessment of U.S. arms policies for that region.
Clearly, the sale of military equipment to the Persian Gulf states, with all the instability that exists in the Persian Gulf, with the opportunities for the Persian Gulf nations to divert various military equipment to the Arab-Israeli conflict, provides, I believe, instability, which can, over a longer period of time, be a serious threat to peace in that part of the world.
Incidentally, there was another call for U.S. arms aid this week from the military government of Ethiopia, which for the first time admitted officially the intensity and seriousness of the rebellion by guerrilla secessionists in the northern province of Eritrea. The U.S. is reluctant to grant very much new aid for fear of upsetting those Arab nations that support the Eritrean secessionists. The dispute in Cyprus went back to the U.N. this week. The Greek majority and the Turkish minority of the population still unable to agree on how to live on the island nation with each other. CBS News UN correspondent Richard C. Hutlett sums up the impasse.
The Security Council started discussing the new Cyprus crisis, but slowly and reluctantly. The Greek and Turkish Cypriots are in total collision. The Greeks want the council to put its earlier resolutions into effect, get foreign troops withdrawn from the island, return nearly 200,000 refugees to their homes in safety, and preserve Cyprus as an independent state. They accuse the Turks of, in effect, partitioning the republic by brute force. For their part, the Turkish Cypriots say that after years of victimization by the Greek Cypriot majority, they can live only in their own separate, secure community, which now covers some 40% of the island. So far, of the major powers, only the Soviet Union has spoken. Moscow tends to side with Archbishop Makarios and the Greek Cypriots, and as in the Middle East, wants to play a major role in negotiating a settlement. The United States thinks this would only complicate matters. Washington, very worried about the eastern flank of NATO, wants to preserve good relations with Greece and Turkey. It urges the two Cypriot communities to work out their future. The question is how? And nothing like an answer has yet emerged. Richard C. Hottlett, CBS News.
This week in Spain, more of the political dissatisfaction with the creaking Franco regime came to the surface with a surprising response to a call by the political underground for a general strike. Surprising because in Spain, strikes are illegal. But there was a sizable turnout nonetheless. University students in particular, housewives in many areas protesting high prices, and workers in some local industry. The economic story this week was drearily the same at home and abroad. The common market nations of Europe reported indications of a slight decline in the rate of inflation, but continued high unemployment, the highest in the 17-year history of the market community, with no immediate prospect of any improvement. The U.S. inflation rate also continued to ease downward. Figures out this week showed the annual rate for the last 3 months was 9.2%, down from a high of 15% during the preceding 3 months. But unemployment figures remained high, with some indication that the actual numbers are higher than these statistics indicate. In Washington this week, Judge John Sirica handed down jail sentences to four top aides of former President Nixon. A minimum of 2.5 years in jail for Mitchell, Haldeman, and Ehrlichman. A minimum of 10 months for former Assistant Attorney General Robert Mardian. In Chicago, the former Special Watergate prosecutor, Leon Jaworski, said he thinks the former president should issue a statement on the tragedy.
I would hope that former President Nixon would do the same soul-searching that every individual should make. He's had experiences as tragic as have been his. And I would hope that this soul-searching would bring forth a statement. He ought to say what's in his heart. He ought to say above all things the truth.
Former President Nixon and his wife, spending the weekend at the Palm Springs estate of billionaire publisher Walter Annenberg, enjoyed a private dinner with friends last night. Frank Sinatra, Bob Hope, Ronald Reagan, Leonard Firestone, and others. Annenberg called it a quiet gathering of old friends. The World This Week has been produced by Harry Polosian. I'm Alan Jackson, CBS News.